are listening to a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To subscribe to this podcast, visit questformeaning.org or search for Church of the Larger Fellowship in the iTunes Store.
Good morning. This is Meg Riley here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. You've joined us for a special episode of The View. Today, we're going to honor the legacy of a great woman who died this week, last week, after a long and amazing life, which included a great deal of influence within Unitarian Universalism, as well as many other parts of her life. So I want to start by saying this is in no way attempting to be a comprehensive portrayal of the woman who is Denise Taft Davidoff, but simply some stories about how she impacted Unitarian Universalism for her decades of committed and active service. So we have guests who are here now. We have others who will be coming in. They'll be introducing themselves as they speak, including when and how they got to know Denny. But let's start by inviting Michael, our other regular host, to say hello.
Good morning, everyone. Greetings from Peekskill, New York, where it snowed last night and I got to experience my first two-hour delay as a parent putting a child on a school bus. So if I'm a little fuzzy, it's because I had two fewer hours to to get ready for this morning. It's good to be with you and great to be celebrating Denny this morning.
Thanks, Michael. And we also have Jessica Starrockers, who's out from behind the chalice today.
I'm out from behind the chalice, but I'm still working hard over here. And I have my Christmas tree behind me. I'm in Seattle area, and it's early morning, and I'm happy to be here.
Thanks, Jess. So, you know, I want to start again by saying that we're talking about a part of Denny's public life, her life in Unitarian Universalism, and to lift up that first and foremost, if you knew Denny, she was fiercely devoted to her family, ferociously, one could say, to her husband, Jerry, to her kids and her grandkids and her cousins and her nieces and nephews and this giant cloud of witnesses that were always with her. So I want to especially say that we are thinking of you these days as we have lost someone that we loved deeply, but knew not as well as you did and not as intimately, obviously. So, well, one of the people who's agreed to be here with us is the former president of the UUA, among other things, John Buren's. Probably besides Jerry, John had the most public partnership with Denny, I would say. He was president when she was the moderator, from 1993 to 2001.
There are several things I want to say about Denny. One was that she was just the consummate lay leader, wonderful partner in leadership with me. She had total respect for my responsibilities as for spiritual leadership and strategic direction, and I had total respect for her genius at a group process, both at the General Assembly and at the board. One of my dearest memories of her is at a board meeting that was not going at all well. My recollection is that we were working on some aspect of trying to get the UUA engaged again in anti-racism work. And the discussion was bogging down. And I always sat to her right and I whispered to her that I thought we ought to take a break from the discussion, which we did. She gaveled the meeting to a brief recess. And over in the corner, I said to her, Denny, the way this is going, the devil in me thinks we should just take the whole matter off the table right now, have you do something like appoint a moderator's task force and bring back something a little bit more digested so we can have a better discussion. And Denny made the namaste gesture toward me and said, the devil in me salutes the devil in you. And that's exactly what she did. The other great memory I have is of a real conspiracy that we had at the General Assembly in Indianapolis in 1996, when there was a resolution of immediate witness put on the floor for the UUA to go on record as endorsing civil recognition of same-sex marriage. We would have been, we did become, as a result of that, the first religious group in America to take that stand. We'd previously, of course, endorsed our clergy helping same-sex couples celebrate their unions, but not civil marriage. Well, the way we did this was by prearrangement. I rose rather unusually on the floor at the procedural microphone to a point of personal privilege. You may remember this, Meg. And then I asked, as the spiritual leader of the movement, for all of the people in same-sex relationships, whether their partners were present or not, to join me up on the platform so that the assembly could see how many people were there present and affected by the issue. And of course, there were almost 100 people who joined me on the platform. The resolution passed overwhelmingly. People screamed that what I had done was unparliamentary and inappropriate, but I didn't care. Neither did Denny. We were both deeply committed to the anti-oppression work of the association, and I loved working with her on it in so many, many different ways.
She put together that meeting that took place in St. Louis, right? I mean, there were a number of meetings during your 8 years together where we gathered to envision anti-racist Unitarian Universalism. I think of her particularly around that St. Louis meeting. I don't remember what year that was.
I don't either. And it's one at which I was not present. I visited almost 600 of our congregations during that period. And the way I was able to do that was by concentrating on my own role as a spiritual leader and allowing Denny to do quite a number of the more difficult procedural things that needed to be done. When we decided at one point to allow the Canadian Unitarian Council to really be more independent of the UUA than it had been, Denny handled that meeting as well. I really respected the way she could handle some very difficult discussions.
Yeah, her son Doug wrote me and said that that was one of the most significant things for her that she did was the separation of the CUC. He said that it was the last official act of his moderator was signing the paper separating the CUC from the UUA. He says key to this was accounting for the Canadian portion of the UUA's and district endowment funds and returning the full value. And she could handle those kind of really complex details with grace. And as you referenced with her namaste, with great humor. So she could soften the blow sometimes.
At the General Assembly, I remember so vividly her once saying, an amendment to the amendment to the amendment? You wouldn't like to maybe cut me a break here, would you?
Or she said once, I'll buy you lunch if you sit down.
Yes. One of the things that I revealed at the party that was thrown for the two of us when we completed our tenure as co-leaders was that Denny was actually a first cousin of the comedian Henny Youngman. And she had that ability to bring humor into even the most tense conversations.
She could wield a one-liner. Well, I'm really excited that Linda Shannon Bluestein has joined us. Google makes it hard sometimes, but we're really glad you're here because Linda is from Denny's home congregation, Westport. And, you know, some national leaders really claim the national world kind of as a parachurch, but Denny remained very active in Westport for her entire Unitarian Universalist life. So Linda, are you there? You just turned into your picture, I hope. There you are. Well, tell us about Denny in Westport, when you met her and what she was doing. I heard up until the very last minute, she was super involved there, but how was she in Westport, Connecticut?
Interesting. We know Denny in Westport very differently than I think the whole UU universe knows her, because We were part of Fairfield County Citizens for Choice. We were part of the campaign to elect a woman as first elected in Westport. We were involved in marches. We were involved in the community more. And a lot of members at our congregation didn't know Denny as anybody who had anything to do outside of the walls of our congregation in the town of Westport. She told me the story long ago about how she became a Unitarian Universalist. Jerry had gone to the church first because people, I think, in his law practice said, you ought to go there. And he came home from his first service. And Denny said, so how did it go? And, Jerry said, well, I found nothing to object to. And then she said, okay, I'll go. And it took her 6 years to sign the book, which she finally did. And that was one of the many Denny stories. But she
a great story. Yeah, she had grown up Jewish, obviously, with David.
And that's why it took her 6 years to sign the book.
And to know her was to know that Judaism was very important to her. She wrote a lot about that. She talked a lot about that. And she, part of her interfaith work was because she grew up, you know, with interfaith being part of what she was doing as a Jewish person in the United States in a time when assimilation was not as easy. So.
No, and her mother, Bunny, was a very big factor in Temple Israel, which was next door to our church. So it took Denny 6 years to sign the book after she started coming and teaching in religious education and joining committees and becoming president of the Women's Alliance.
And so what do you know what year she joined? When that was?
She and Jerry both showed up in 1960, and Arnold Westwood was our minister. And Denny signed the book in 1966.
1966, yeah, that's great. And she always at General Assembly, besides her national role, you would see her with her posse from Westport having meals and walking around. And she remained very dedicated to both linking people from Westport to the larger world, which she was always doing with everybody, making those kinds of connections, but also taking Unitarian Universalism back to Westport in really profound ways. How would you say that she shaped the congregation there? She and Jerry, I mean, we should really say that she and Jerry were quite a team. And
oh, indeed. Oh, indeed. People knew Denny in our congregation, as I say, vastly different from people who go to GA. People at GA saw her at the podium. They saw her with wit, with charm, with skill. And people in the congregation knew her as a private mentor. So when our women's group had a potluck a couple of weeks ago, or last week, 35 women sat around, and their reflections of Denny were not about Denny the powerful, Denny the speaker, Denny the moderator, but Denny the woman who encouraged me and who said I could do this and who pointed me to direction or gave me a book. Very different view. And many women in our congregation, I would say, they have no idea that Denny was ever the moderator of our church, of our denomination.
She was a leader in your congregation, I'm sure, many times. How many times was she?
She was on the board twice. She left the board service in 2015 after we called the Reverend John Morehouse. And then she immediately went to the Legacy Committee and to the Nominating Committee. So she didn't get far away from leadership, but much less as she wasn't the board president. She wasn't, you know, that visible.
I think that there are lots of us outside of Westport who also knew Denny as a mentor. And it's amazing to know and just to think about how someone with that much leadership presence and that much skill at process and governance also had so much energy for mentoring individuals. And I think it's probably a good time to bring Jordan Nelson Long to this conversation, because part of her last job was doing development work for Meadville Lombard Theological School, but she was so much more than just a fundraiser there. She really took an interest in the students there and their formation into ministers, among the many other people that she mentored in her long service to our faith. So Jordan, do you want to tell us a little bit about your, how you know Demi?
Sure. So I'm Jordan Nelson Long. I am serving our congregation here in Fairhaven, Massachusetts, which was one of Denny's favorite buildings. I think she liked our congregation too, but she really liked this building. And like so many of the students at Meadville, possibly all of the students at Meadville, I got to know her at least in a cursory way, you know, even in my first year at Meadville. And Denny said unashamedly, I think to many of us, I collect ministers. And so she did go out of her way to gather people and to connect us with each other and to make clear that she had hopes for us. So I benefited from that during my time at Meadville, and even more so, I think, after my call here. And she actually, I was telling Meg before we got started, she sat in this chair where I am now sitting during my installation weekend. She was sitting here leading interviews. They were about the ministry of Kendall Gibbons. She was trying to give a greater voice to what ministers in our movement had done and introduce that to a new audience of people. And in her trademark Denny way, she came to my installation and was celebrating here, but was also using the occasion as a podium to do and achieve more for our movement. And I think some of the magic of Denny is that she was able to do those things. And rather than ever feeling used, you felt privileged to be part of whatever it was that she was trying to accomplish, like deeply overjoyed to jump on the bandwagon with her. So I'm really grateful to have video of interviews that were taken in this office in the name of our UU institutions.
Jordan, I saw your Facebook post that she would have an idea, and by the time she talked to you for a while, you would think it was your idea. You were so excited about it.
Right.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, we talk a lot these days about consent. It's a huge topic, and many people have been posting. Denny was someone you never said no to, but it was not in a way that you ever felt bad about it. Like you were saying, Jordan, you felt privileged to be part of whatever you originally thought you didn't want to be part of. By the time you were part of it, it was just the right thing to be doing. We've been joined by Leon Spencer, and I want to bring Dr. Spencer into the conversation too, because Leon, you were on the board, the UUN. We'll be circling around this, you know, many stories. And Jessica also is a Meadville student who knows Denny now. But Leon, I wanted to welcome you and to say you were on the board with Denny. When did that start, and how do you know her? And
I've been thinking about when I first met Denny. I know we served on the board together. We served on the board before she was moderator. Denny, I think our first contact was probably with the Black Concerns Working Group. I was a layperson in a congregation in South Carolina who had never had any experience and really working denominational wide and barely in the district, mainly because my minister was told they were looking for such a person of color, who had not been involved, layperson. And Denny sort of became a mentor, a teacher, and she did it in such a style that, she did it in such a style that you found yourself in the middle of it, you know, before you knew where you were going exactly. She taught me to challenge, to give voice to things, because I was basically a shy person, still am. And to give myself a voice and to go deeper into what is it that we want as a faith community, particularly around issues of justice. We probably talked more initially when I was on the Black Concerns Working Group, and they were doing a transition from the Women's Federation to Women in Religion. And that's where our conversations around justice and equality started to really grow. On the board, she was an organizer, but a listener. She listened, she challenged, and she loved. She also had a sense of humor. As we really developed a relationship where we'd just have a chat and talk at times, I can remember sitting in the middle of the Charlotte General Assembly, and our Native American friends were doing an opening, and the opening was, well, was not within, say, the white power structure's time frame. It just went on, and it was wonderful. I could sense Denny getting antsy at one point, and for some reason, I turned to her and I said, "Oh, Denny, stop being so white." She looked, she laughed, and she said, "Thank you. I'm going to think about that." And she's never let me forget that. Even to our last meeting together at General Assembly in New Orleans, when she said, "Have you really ever said to someone else, well, stop being so white?" And I said, "I have now." And she says, "I have too." So that we could have fun, we could be honest, we could challenge, and we could be true to our faith. Also, it was a relationship where, when we first met, it was Jerry and Denny. And so it was this team. And they were both dedicated to justice making. She gave permission for me to step in and to step out. She encouraged me to rock the boat. And I'm not the only person I've heard say this, that Denny Davidoff rocked the boat. Be it God language, be it anti-racism, being called anti-racism, be it women's issues, be it her time. I was on the Meadville board when Denny moved to Meadville. Wherever she went, she was authentically Denny, and she was what I believe our faith values, she represented all our faith values, say we are. Now, I know that's more than the first recollection, but that's what comes to mind.
Thanks, Leon. Yeah, she was...
Well, let me add one more thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should thank Thomas Jefferson for bringing Denny and I together, too, because we met during that period when I was the Board of Trustees representative from the Thomas Jefferson District of the UUA. And we were desperately trying to change our name and were unsuccessful in doing that. Denny was quite a strategist. And she could help to really keep a lot of us focused to deal with pain there, but move into the action. Thank you.
Thank you, Leon. Thank you. Yeah, I was mentioning earlier to John that number of those big meetings that she organized around the anti-racism work, the St. Louis one particularly comes to my mind, but there were a series of really big, complicated meetings where all kinds of justice-centered groups came together that she was orchestrating. When you say she was a strategist, it wasn't a simple conversation going on.
I think one of the elements of that was that during the time that Denny and I were in leadership, just getting re-engaged with the race issue was tough work. We had made some real progress on women's issues and on homophobia during the 70s and 80s, but the race issue had been left behind. I began my ministry in Knoxville, Tennessee in the 70s when I saw a congregation that had been very much involved in the civil rights movement actually lose a lot of its Black leadership, partly because Black nationalism was drawing them back into the Black churches. And the conflict in the 1960s that Denny had been very much a part of, the Black Affairs Council, Black and White BAWA controversy, that had sort of made a lot of UU national leaders skittish about dealing with the race issue. Both Denny and I brought to our time in leadership a determination that we were going to get back and engaged. I'd been very active with the Urban Church Coalition in my ministries, first in Knoxville and then in Dallas and then in New York City. And Denny just had a gift for realizing how important racial and ethnic diversity was going to be for the future of the movement, and a deep-seated personal commitment to anti-racism that went back to the work that she and Jerry had done in Connecticut. You know, one of the things that's worth mentioning is that beyond her Unitarian Universalist involvement, she chaired a workforce development program in Bridgeport, Connecticut, that was all about getting decent employment opportunities and training for people of color. So it wasn't just denominational.
By not at all. She was so involved, as I think Linda was saying, in so many justice efforts in her own local area. I did want to say her first General Assembly was 1968 in Cleveland, right. When the walkout took place, and she was part of that. And she, I was told, was really looking forward to her 50th anniversary of that this coming year. And only the day of her death, her son Doug told me that Tom Stites realized, no, she'd been to 50 General Assemblies. This last year was her 50th. But I happened to be behind her a couple of years ago when Black Lives of UU came walking in. And she was weeping because for her, that was a bookend to the 1968 walk out. And I know that she was very, very much supportive of, and actually one of the strategic leaders of, getting this money to Black Lives of UU as a form of reparations for what happened back then. So yeah, she really, she carried that history with her, and she did not leave it behind.
One of the other things that I want to lift up is how much I appreciated her willingness to tell Unitarian Universalists it was time to stop Christian bashing. To do that from her Jewish heritage, to really stand up for pluralism in our movement, was just a gift to me as a spiritual leader. I'm married to a priest in the Episcopal Church. And, you know, I've long identified with Unitarian Universalist Christianity, but for me to have said that would have been ineffective. And then he understood profoundly how important it was that we walk the walk about genuinely being open to people of a variety of spiritual perspectives, Jewish, Christian, Buddhist, humanist, fill in the blank. And that too was a struggle during the 1990s. The work that you lifted up about Canada was part of a larger strategy that took our pluralism spiritually into a more international realm, where we created the International Council of Unitarians and Universalists. This was quite a departure from what had been previous UUA policy, where we were admitting congregations from different cultures around the world. Both of us knew that if we proceeded down that path, we were going to be pretty quickly guilty of a kind of spiritual imperialism. We had to have a real respectful autonomy and partnership with other religious groups with which we share some kinship, whether it was the more Christian-oriented Unitarians of Hungary and Transylvania, or the groups that were cropping up everywhere from Pakistan to Africa. And she really got that.
She got it all. Leon, it looked like you were trying to come in back on the some of the anti-racism work, but you have to unmute for us to hear you.
No, I was going to piggyback on something that John said. I think that in doing our anti-racism work, particularly as we started to work with other groups outside of the UUA, it was particularly important that we challenge also some of our ways of thinking around Christianity, around other religious groups who were doing the work and how we connected with them. And I think she was very helpful in helping us to build that bridge or to work with that piece as to how do we connect with other theological points of view? How do we deal in the God language kind of piece in the work that we're doing? And she was just instrumental in that happening. During that whole period of time when we were having the crossroads experience and all the tension that brought. But I think that Denny was able, I know in one meeting in Lynn, I think it was, to really bring it home for us to look at our theology and to also to look at our ways and prejudice ways and oppressive ways with other faith groups. How do we bridge? So she taught us to do some bridging and then to start to look deeper at how critical this was to linking oppressions if we were to do the work. So that's what I was wanting to get in.
Yeah, thanks, Leon. Speaking of that, Linda, I wanted to mention, you had sent me an email about Denny's work with the Women's Federation, and that was her first move from Westport to national leadership. And I think that the kind of mentorship we're talking about and the kind of intersectionality that we're talking about, a lot of that came from her work with the Women's Federation. Have you, Linda, you sent me an email, but I wondered if you ever talked to her about that part of her work with the Women's Fed.
We talked about the Women's Federation from the beginning. I think the first time Denny and I met and went out to, she took me out to lunch like she did everybody. To kind of scope you out and see who you were and what you could connected her life with. And it's right. The year that she was asked to be on the search committee for the Women's Federation was a tough one in her life. She had lost her brother, and her mother had lost her husband, too, within a few weeks of each other. And she was asked to be on the search committee for the Women's Federation. She didn't even know what it was. But Jerry said, why don't you do it? It'll be a good distraction for you. And so she stayed involved, was very involved in the Women and Religion Resolution, which was passed in 1977. And this coming Sunday, we are having a 40th anniversary celebration of women and religion and all the things that it did. That Denny was very proud about the work that she really shepherded through not only General Assembly, but through just the real work in congregations during that time. And at the 20th anniversary of the Women in Religion Resolution passing, she was moderator. And she was very happy to be with Rosemary and all the other women sharing in the joy of how the changes that that had brought on our denomination. And she got me involved in the Women's Federation, all the way up to our 50th anniversary GA in Charlotte. It was very important to her. It was important to her, the connections that she made in Westport as well. So, but imagine her saying, gee, I've never done anything in the larger denomination. I think I'll try the Women's Federation to distract myself. And that kind of wrote the history of her involvement.
And she talked about being mentored there herself in profound ways.
Oh, she was indeed. And I don't know if many of you remember the GA in Quebec when we were going to have a celebration of the women and religion. And a woman from the Metro New York District had written a play called The Roots of Rebellion. And all these women ministers, all the leaders, Leslie Westerbrook and Rosemary, and everybody was going to be part of this. And Tandaka was going to play Sojourner Truth. And so we were getting ready for rehearsals. And that thing blew apart like I have never seen a theater blow apart. And she got us all together. And we ended up the night having dinner until 2 in the morning in Quebec talking about the women and the Women's Federation and how we could be together.
Did it blow apart about racism or something else?
It blew apart mainly about racism. Uh-huh. Yes, it did indeed. It was the Sojourner Truth lines that got the whole thing going, and people turned in their costumes and said, I'm not going to be part of this anymore. And the play ultimately was presented, but not as planned. Whatever is.
Denny was always in those rooms till 2 in the morning. And, you know, a lot of us have been in those rooms at various places and times. And she did not leave. She did not shy away from the conflict and the necessary friction to move ahead.
She was always connecting people. You know, she I remember once at a GA, Leon, I don't even remember what it was. We were both district presidents back then. And she said, Linda, I want you to go out to dinner with Leon. Leon, I want you to go out to dinner with Linda. Remember that? We were just sitting there. Okay, well, let's talk to each other.
Yep, that was what she was always doing. I should say that she served on the CLF board, including as the chair of it, and made her mark there as she did everywhere. And I'm sure in her life, that's a tiny blip, but in the life of...
No, it was huge. Are you kidding me? Our time on the CLF board, we were on the board together. And Jerry was very, very ill at the time and couldn't walk. She had to buy this Cadillac so that he could get his leg into the car. And she says, well, we're going to drive to Boston and we're going to go together. And we sat at the CLF board meetings, and that was a highlight. I mean, we look forward to that. So very important.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, that was before my time, but she certainly made her mark. Jessica, you're a Meadville student now, and I'm just going to loop this around. The students there knew Denny in particular ways. Is the word mentor in your mind as well?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's, you know, I have to say, I'm just still kind of in shock that she has passed, because her presence was such a large experience of being at Meadville. And you know, a sort of ripple would sort of go through the room when she walked in, and she would take her time to make her way to all the folks that she wanted to connect with and wanted to see. And you know, if Denny walked up to you and said hi, it was sort of a blessing, like that she was speaking with you and hanging out with you and spending her time on you. And yeah, I mean, she was a real presence there. And you know, I'm in my third year, so it hasn't been that long that I've been there. But you know, up until she got sick, she was there for everything and caring for the students and making sure that they were doing well.
You mentioned a significant interaction with her that you had.
Yeah. Well, I was lucky. I'm blessed to be one of the students who receives a scholarship to go there. And so a lot of times she took special care with those students and made sure to connect with me and other students like me. And so I knew her and got to speak with her a bunch, but in one workshop in particular, I remember a professor who I shall not name kind of came for me, a comment that I made, and he sort of put me on the spot, and I was kind of squirming in the front row. And then all of a sudden from the back of the room, Denny's voice, you know, pops up, and she came to bat for me, and I was so grateful, and she was and I just kind of got to step back and let her handle it. but she was really kind, vivacious human.
There are so many lines that people have been saying that I think, yeah, that could be on her tombstone. And she came to bat for me would certainly be one. I think I got to know her when I was the director of what was then the Lesbian and Gay Office. And she was an absolute ally. I never had to wonder. She, I asked her if she would come. We were doing a training of trainers for the Welcoming Congregation before she was moderator, but it looked like she would be moderator. So I invited her to come, and she said, well, you know, I'm traveling so much on the road, I'll come if Jerry can come too. So I said, I asked Kay Montgomery, who said, yes, by all means have them, but be warned, they're really good. You will be tempted to hand the whole thing over to them. Don't do that, but have them come for sure. So I did, and they were both great. And I ran into her a couple years later on Beacon Hill. Beacon Press had just published Transgender Warriors by Leslie Feinberg. And this was before transgender issues or people were really visible in our movement or really in the gay rights movement at that time. And she was reading it, and I asked her what she thought about it. And she said, it's great. It's making me rethink all of my assumptions about gender. And I just loved that she just immediately went there as opposed to being defensive or, you know, like what, or, you know, all the ways that people deal with new information. And I said on Facebook, I watched her literally hundreds of times hear a new perspective, take it in and change who she was. She was a remarkable leader in that she kept her eyes on the prize, but she was always listening for what she didn't know. It was a remarkable combination. How about you, Michael? How did you know her?
So, you know, I don't remember exactly when we met. My tenure working at UUA headquarters started the day before her moderator term ended. And that was my very first General Assembly in 2001 in Cleveland. So we I guess, got to know each other working on various things. But especially, we got to know each other working on anti-racism thing. So I think that, you know, Leon and John, you mentioned, you know, her work in anti-racism in the UUA in the 80s and 90s. And, you know, I worked with her on anti-racism stuff in the mid 2000s, and she was still pushing our faith forward on anti-racism work. When I was in leadership of Allies for Racial Equity, she took a very keen interest in supporting. She wasn't interested in an official role. She'd had enough official roles, I think, in her life at that point. But she took a very keen interest in making sure that the work of Allies for Racial Equity and DRUM, which was our partner organization for people of color, was held up and supported, and that the leaders knew that they were appreciated. And there was something I was doing, and I don't honestly even remember what it was, when I had to, as a new minister in our association, publicly speak some truth to power around racism work. And I honestly, I don't remember the exact circumstances. And I did that as best as I could, which was maybe not the best that anyone could, but the best that I could. And afterwards, she came up to me, and it was at a General Assembly, and she said to me, she said, Michael, I admire your courage. And I almost fell over, right? Like Denny Davidoff, the living embodiment of courage, said that to me. Just like I almost just fell over. And so for many years, every time we saw each other, we would remark to each other how much we admired each other's courage. And it gave me fuel to keep going when things got tough. And again and again, came back to that. It's just, you know, when it got hard, I would just think, well, Denny wouldn't quit now. Denny would, and I think I'll think that for the rest of my life. Denny wouldn't quit now. It's hard. Well, Denny would keep going.
She did. Absolutely. Yeah.
I think she wanted you to think that. I think that's exactly it. She was a strategist. People have said that to her again and again. And she wanted you to be strategic. She wanted all of us to be strategic about our next move and about the movement. And when I think about the connections that she made for each of us, you know, it turned out to be one of the last conversations we ever had. Was over a dinner, and she was telling me about a minister, Liz Lerner McClay, who was moving here, and she was just adamant that I connect with her and get to know her, and had like my next three moves planned. And I'm just thinking about that. And you know, when we get discouraged, Denny was so good at standing you back on your feet, dusting you off, and calmly telling you, you know, go forward, it's going to be okay. And I think it's because she always had this long arc in her view. She was highly strategic, and she wanted us to be as well.
Leon, were you going to say something?
Yeah. One of the things that I think Denny just demonstrated, she knew when not to be in the room. As we started to work with anti-racism, there was always a lot of tension when we broke up into groups of people of color, people of different identities, and white people. And Denny knew how to bridge that and to really know when not to be in the room and to facilitate that process happening, where everybody would fall to pieces in a sense sometimes around the thing that you're dividing us up, you're splitting us up, we're Unitarian Universalists. She reframed that into the excitement of the possibilities and also the opportunity that white Unitarian Universalists and all of us would have focus on ourselves and our faith community. Because it's important to be in the room, but it's important to know when not to be there. And she knew that almost instinctively. And she encouraged that process. It's a great organizer, and that's a great ally to have. Chaos was welcomed.
Yeah, chaos. She really could handle that. It's a really good point. Not all leaders can. I wanted to mention that Mel Hoover really wanted to be here, and we had a long conversation. He had technical difficulties this morning. Mel was the director of, and he had many different titles over the years at the UUA, but he was on staff working on, for a while it was racial and cultural diversity. For a while he was the director of Faith in Action. He had many titles, but he and Denny were strategizing together often. Mel is a strategist, and the two of them, I think, supported each other, egged each other on, figured out when one of them could do something better than the other and how to really be a team in the same way that John described being a strong teammate with her. So I'm sorry that Mel, if you're listening and you want to say anything on YouTube, we'd love to include your voice, because he had quite a few memories of that work.
Let me add one more element that's not often thought of, and that's Denny's involvement with the Interfaith Alliance.
Yes.
When she and I became respectively moderator and president, the so-called Christian Coalition had arisen and was attempting to really speak for all of religious America in ways that were really disrespectful of the basic pluralism that is America at its best. The need for an interfaith voice to counter that was palpable to both of us. The Democratic National Committee, with which Denny often had frustrations, had spun off an organization that rather haltingly was trying to bring together faith leaders all the way through the 90s, trying to bring together interfaith progressive leaders, was foundering on various egos and political problems in Washington. You know this, Meg. Denny got involved with the Interfaith Alliance at a critical point, and I really credit its rise to her genius in finding and recruiting Welton Gaddy, who became the executive director of the Interfaith Alliance. And one of the ways in which she knew what to stay out of, she never once got in my way around budgetary issues, or sometimes she'd say, help me find the money. In order to get the Interfaith Alliance launched, we at the UUA actually had to very quietly loan them a very substantial amount of money to get them out from under the Democratic National Committee and really working as an effective, independent, truly interfaith organization. Denny and I did that together, almost conspiratorially again, with her saying, John, I think this is worth doing. I trusted her implicitly, particularly in her judgment about Welton, who certainly paid off. I found the money. Kay Montgomery often said to me, thank God you know how to deal with numbers. And I always felt that Denny respected my basic institutional fiscal conservatism. During the 8 years that we worked together, the net worth of the UUA went up substantially because we were both very good at not spending more than we took in and at strategizing to actually raise money effectively. And we were able to do things like invest in launching a truly effective interfaith voice out there in America, which is, I think, one of our shared legacies. And Denny went on to chair the Interfaith Alliance Foundation. I think that organization never would have taken off without
her. I agree with you there, John. I served on that board with her, and she was, as per usual, she was connecting people. She was finding people to bring in. She was finding the resources, and she was making it work. I'm sad to say that we are going to wrap, so I'm going to offer everybody a last word. Again, my last word will be to reiterate what I said at the beginning, that we are naming particular contributions that Denny Davidoff made to Unitarian Universalism. We are grieving her loss both as a leader and as a beloved friend and mentor. However, we really want to acknowledge and recognize that there are people grieving at this season in much deeper, more profound, and more intimate ways than we are. And so once again, to name her beloved family, who, as devoted as she was to Unitarian Universalism, her family was always the center of her life and first and foremost. And any of us who ever talked to her for more than 5 minutes saw Mama Tiger there with her family. So I just want to name that. I can't begin to imagine the loss that you're experiencing, but my heart is with you at this time. Last word, Jordan, got one?
Denny did a better job than anyone I've experienced in reminding us on the Unitarian Universalist side of things that if we don't take care of our UU institutions, if we are not intentional about investing in them, lifting them up, donating to them, that we can't expect anyone else in the world to do that work for us. And that's a legacy I hope to carry forward.
Amen. She would love that you said that, Jordan. Linda, how about you?
I'm going to echo what Jordan said. Denny gave me so much, but she gave me many ways to write checks. And she never was shy about asking it, whether it was for the Interfaith Alliance, whether it was for the Church of the Larger Fellowship, if it was for Meadville, if it was for the congregation. And even recently it was, we don't have enough money for this ordination. Linda, we're going to sponsor it. you know, I need you to write me a check for $250, you know, for Laura's art. And so, yeah, I hope to continue that too, because it gave me great joy.
Amen. Michael.
I just, you know, I'm going to carry courage in my heart, and I trust that there will be forthcoming many opportunities to give to our faith in Denny's honor and memory.
Jessica?
You know, I mean, I think that for all of the Meadville students and for the, you know, Meadville family as a whole, it's a deep loss, and we will be continuing to honor her, you know, in the weeks ahead. We all gather in January, and we'll be speaking about her and sharing our memories of her and all that at Meadville as well. And I also want to say that Mel messaged me and sends his regrets that he couldn't be on the call, and his love, and that he's been watching and thinking of us and of Denny.
Thanks. John?
When I think of Denny, I think of the real meaning of faith. It's the opposite of fear. She just persisted with true faithfulness to the family, the larger spiritual family that she had adopted. And I am going to treasure forever the way in which she partnered with me in leading our movement. She was just a consummate partner, first to her husband, then to me in leadership. And I really have never had as fine a friend as I found in Denny Davidoff.
Amen. There is a date set for Denny's memorial service. It's February 3rd at the Westport Congregation. I know there are conversations about live streaming it. I'm not yet sure if that will happen, but I know that many
of us. Going to happen.
Pardon me?
That is not going to happen.
Oh, it's not going to happen. Okay. I know that many of us will be continuing this storytelling and remembering and honoring in a number of contexts for years to come. And my hope in doing this show is that this is a woman who will live on as she obviously is, but that no one will ever say, who's that? I don't know who that is. Thank you so much for being here, everybody. And blessed holidays to all. Take care.
This has been a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To find out more about the CLF, visit questformeaning.org.